C1S, number 26B.
Can we renew the love of it? Can we also widen the vision of it more and more? If not, if we are dogmatic, denominational, restricted, orthodox, then we will not be able to meet the challenge and it will disintegrate within us. Because that's the beauty of being, that being always goes forward. It is never stagnant. It never says, well, you have reached a wonderful state and you can stay there happily until the end of your seventh life. You can't. See? Can't. Being goes forward. And we can only be happy and be going forward-ish if we are going forward. So it has been reduced at the present age to a system. And we all love that system. I mean, we all see that this system as science, as especially as John Dolly has explained it to us, is an answer to an age in which we live. But we must be thinking it's already, again, about 30 years or more that John Dolly did see that system. And again, we can ask ourselves, well, what would he be doing today if we were still here? Do you think he would still say the same things as what we read that he was writing 20, 30 years ago? He certainly wouldn't. Knowing John Dolly, he certainly wouldn't. He would say something very different than what we are going back to. Now, I know it's a courageous thing for me to say, because I may get the challenge to say, well, this Max, he's going to question the Bible, then he's going to question the textbook, now he's going to question John Dolly. But I'm sure you will be fair enough towards me to see my point. My only point is to see, don't let's fall into the same trap as every religion is tempted to fall in, so that the idea can go forward, because it must go forward. And truly, I think there is going to be going something forward. I think Exeter will be something of that kind, that is new, that has not been done before, that has not been experienced before, because Exeter will not be, as we see it, another Oxford occasion, and as an Oxford school, where a big caliber like John Dolly is just giving the tone, and we are only too happy to be there and sit at his feet and listen to it. But a new spirit is moving somehow, and we see that what we conceive of being Exeter is putting really personalities out of sight as much as possible, so that the individual few speakers who are there, though they have a little place there, that we try to eliminate the personality and the personal contribution of that individual speaker as much as possible, so that in the main, really, the whole conference as a whole is the conference, and is carrying the conference. And it isn't what the few individual speakers will present there that is necessary and that is important and that will really give the touch to the conference, just the other way around. I think what we perceive is that we are one body that is carrying the conference, that is showing, can we prove that there is only one divine Holy Ghost moving us all? Or one, can we break down that sense of having teachers and students, of having somebody up on the platform like I am now, and the other one sitting down like the others? Can we break that down at some occasions and see that spirit is one, and that spirit is the spirit of everyone? And I think the absolutely new thing that is being brought out and would be wonderful to be brought out in Exeter is this, that it is an occasion with no premeditated program. We have such few premeditation on it only so far as really the five individual speakers have said on what they will speak for just for 2 hours, 2 hours and a half. But besides that, the individual steps backward into the rank and file of the whole conference, and therefore the whole day really is unpremeditated and is therefore to be carried by the present spontaneous Spirit and the Holy Spirit as it was on the day of Pentecost. Well, if we can prove that, if we can give the burden of that proof, then we also take on us that burden of disproving that this idea can only go forward through organization. Because then we give the proof that the idea can go forward on a spiritual basis, on a spiritual influx, which comes to each one of us so that each one lives his spiritual inspiration from morning to night, from Monday to Sunday. Well, sorry, I got away from my subject, but it all somehow comes in, you see, that divine metaphysics is reduced to a system adapted to the age in which we live. Let's see that the age in which Jesus lived is not the same as in which Mrs. Eddy lived. And the age in which Mrs. Eddy wrote is already nearly, well, it's 3/4 of a century hence. And think what in other fields of science, what the difference there is between a physicist of today and a physicist of the end of the last century. Can't be compared anymore. And so it is in the spiritual realm. Then she goes on to the fourth point, that I put it like this: the demonstration of these rules shows through practical tests that truth has lost none of its healing efficacy. She speaks now that he has reduced it to rules, and then in principle she says, I tested them over and over and over. You see, principle is that which proves the rules. And said, I have tested that and found that truth has lost none of his healing efficacy. So that truth which was as old as God, but which has been reduced to the present form, you see, goes, so to say, back to the truth itself and says, that truth is really proving itself again in unrestrictedly, if we can see its reduction to the present age. I think more and more, you see, that the textbook has not only to show that truth is a science, but also that truth is being, capital B. Now, being itself doesn't need a science. And therefore, I can see what these natural scientists begin to feel in their bones, that the way is through science, but past science, namely to being, capital B. That science really is only a working tool for us, for the present age. God itself, being itself, as not the science, because being itself is being. And science is that wonderful tool which our present age, well, that present age going, starting about 500 BC up to now, is that which is that medium, that working tool, which is able to grasp being as being. So that the textbook presents both the science and the being, capital B, but can show that in order to be in one with being, capital B, the way is through science, but past science into the science of being, so that finally as Mr. Zeddy would always show, that best healings were when they just, and it just was filled with the sense of God is all, with being. Then she goes further to the fifth subtone. I have summarized it like this: the practice of these rules lifts us high above antiquated theories and enables us to grasp the spiritual facts of being. Now, these rules of healing therefore have as its purpose to grasp being, you see, not the healing, but to bring us into being, so that healing, true healing, is only that which has as its effect that it does us bring nearer to true being, not to a better, healthier body, but into being. Here she says it's those two marginal headings on page 147 of Perusal and Practice, and then afterwards a definite rule discovered. In the first paragraph, she just shows that it's not enough to have just a smattering knowledge of the textbook by a perusal of the textbook, that it needs to be studied, that the true letter, the absolute letter, must be understood, and that through demonstrating those rules, we plant ourselves firmly. Then in the second, next paragraph, we have that important statement where she compares the time of Jesus with the time of Christian Science. She sees that rediscovery where she shows that Jesus healed, our Master healed the sick, practiced Christian healing, and taught the generalities of its divine principles to his students. You know where I am, 147:24. But he left no definite rule for demonstrating this principle of healing and preventing disease. This rule remained to be discovered in Christian Science. She gives quite definitely that Jesus' age was a different age than our age. That Jesus' age didn't need to state the principle and rule, but our age needs to state the principle and rule of healing. I don't know what needs the next age, and when it starts, the next age. But nobody hinders us to be open for being transparent and feel the approaching of a new era. And then she makes that interesting statement afterwards on 29, a pure affection takes form in goodness. But, then comes the but again, but science alone reveals the divine principle of goodness and demonstrates its rule. She, in the Christian healing phase of the holy uplifting phase, it was enough to have those pure affections, and that they take form, that they take form in goodness. But today, that is not enough anymore. We have to rise to the signs of it and see the principle and the rules of goodness. Well, that's the third subject. Let me just summarize it quickly, what she says in this third. She just shows how now that eternal medicine of mind that was always at the disposition of all ages, that has gone lost because of the loss of the absolute letter. That because religion didn't have the absolute letter, religion submitted itself to the rational thinking of medical science, and so the spiritual power of healing did go lost. And therefore, that a substitution of material medicine for spiritual means didn't do the trick. And so this age-old truth had to be rediscovered but this time not only in its spirit, but this time stated in its absolute letter, in its system. And only on that ground it can be an eternal, a permanent dispensation, as she says, a permanent dispensation which may not go lost again once its science has been stated. That's the bigness of her discovery. And then she shows that having discovered those rules, she tested those rules and found them not wanting, and finally she sees that these rules have not just it as its effect a physical improvement, but that it brings us into real being. So that's real healing. Alright. It took me a bit too long to go through this one. I must a bit hurry from now on. But I think the next subject on principle is rather a easy subject, and I think I can go a bit quicker through those. You see, what we want to show by giving a structure to a text is that in this way we are able to crystallize better the very different defined subjects of a text. So when we look back, the first subject of mind was very crystal, just showing mind is the medicine. The second subject was very crystal clear, just saying this mind is the only mind, the only medicine, therefore it does not need to collaborate with any other so-called medical agent. The third was again very crystal clear. It was the question, why then did this age-old medicine, which is God, go lost out of sight? Why did it go lost? Why couldn't we use it? And gives the reason why and how it is rediscovered as a permanent, eternal dispensation, so that it is eternally definite, established. Now, the fourth is quite a different question again, namely that it says, well, is this medicine which has been presented up to now the medicine for every ailment, for everything, or only for certain diseases, for certain disharmonies, for certain discords, or not? And the answer here is, and I try to summarize it by saying that truth heals all classifications of disease as well as sin, thus demonstrating its divine origin. You know, sometimes I word these things months before I give them here, because they have to go to Australia and takes them about 2 months to send them there, and then until I have to talk about it, I think I would already word them a bit differently. Here, what she says is, in principle, really this, and I can summarize it through the subtones rather quickly, but she says, you know, in Christian Science, things are so much easier than in any other healing sciences, in medical science and so on, because in medical science you have already about 30,000 different diseases which you can define, and you have another 30,000 drugs with which to heal them. But in Christian Science you just have one principle, and that one principle is the one principle that is the same principle and is applicable to everything, to all ailments, not only to the ailments which fall into the category of medical science, but all of those ailments which fall into the category of theology, like sin and so on. It is one principle and includes all categories of and classifications of disease with which that's not the correct statement, that it is one principle which heals. all categories of disease and sin. The development of the subject is like this. In the first point, I have epitomized it and say the requisite power to heal is in mind and not in obedience to material laws. Perhaps today I would have already stated it a bit different, because I would like to show you through the five subtones what categories the one divine principle includes. Here in this first one, Mrs. Eddy shows that Jesus never classified disease as being either as dangerous or difficult to heal. He had no classification, say this disease is easy to heal and that is difficult to heal, is incurable, this is curable. So he had but one principle acting, and that was obedience to the divine law. That obedience to the divine mind really makes no classification. If the human mind or mortal mind classifies something as incurable or not curable. You know very well out of your own practice that sometimes it is easier to heal a cancer than it is to heal a flu or anything like, you say flu?
Yes.
Or just a cough or anything like that. You can't classify that. Sometimes it's the one thing seems to be easier than the other thing. Whereas the human mind makes very strong classifications. It says, well, this is easy, this is a bit more difficult, this is very difficult, and this is not possible. So in the divine mind is included just one obedience of mind, and that mind, which is divine, includes makes no classification of difficult or not difficult. In the second point, I summarized it because, like this, anatomy, physiology, and theology rejects God's spiritual man and regards him as physical and subject to material law. Perhaps today I would just put it a bit easier or simpler in the way of classification. I would here say what it shows here is that divine principle makes no classification between sin and sickness. That God is the healer of sin and of sickness. Whereas in anatomy and in physiology, they say we can heal disease, and in theology they say we can heal sin. And so they have a separation between them. The one is there to heal physical ailments and the other one is to heal sin. Whereas in Jesus, as she says, showed that truth saves from sickness as well as from sin. I don't have to go into the text in detail, because here she just shows how anatomy regards men only as physical, how physiology regards men as mainly physical with a little bit of mortal mind in it. Then how theology tries to make out of this rotten man a good man and a Christian. How and anatomy and physiology say we are only dealing with man when he's sick, and that theology says we are only dealing with man when he's a sinner. And so they have that classification in these sciences. Christian science unites all this into one principle and says, for me, for principle, it is the same thing if I have to deal with what the human mind calls sickness or if he calls it sin. In the third point, which has a tone of soul, of the definiteness of soul, I summarize it like this. In Christian science, the rules of healing never vary. You see, it's definite, it's invariable, unchangeable, a touch of soul. They outweigh the speculative theories. You see, a negative combination of soul and principle. Speculative theories of materia medica. All what she shows here is also very simple. the just shows that in when we base ourselves on the materia medica, therefore matter, which is always contradictory, that it cannot work definitely, that it has no definite rules and definite success, that if we give to 10 people who have about the same disease, the same drug, that only a few will react this way, another few will react the other way, and another few will not react at all. So that there is no definite rule or no definite success in it, because, as she says, materia medica does not take into account the mental state of the patient. Whereas Christian Science does not say what is the disease materially seen, but says what is the belief, and so deals with the belief. And therefore, with dealing with the belief, it can be direct and it can be specific and therefore definite. And so she says, in Christian Science, the rule of perfection never varies. I just have to go on to the fourth. That is, again, very easy. I summarized it and said, mind governs all classifications of disease and benefits mind and body. So it is what she shows here. She takes up the classification that she says it is functional disease and organic disease. Makes no distinction, no classification. It governs all, she says, and it benefits mind and body. You see, whereas medical science only can benefit the body and never the mind, so Christian Science does both. It's always all-inclusive. It benefits mind and body. And then in the last one, the fifth one, is really the high point. I summarized it like this. The main purpose of Christian Science is not physical healing, but to demonstrate truth as an immanent eternal science, through which each individual can save himself from the bondage of sickness. Can I go on for
a minute and a half?
A minute and a half. That's not enough for me. So we'll stop here and go on after the break.